Here are the WGXC headlines for Monday, March 27th. Massive protests continued in Israel this weekend as the radical right wing continued to try to take over the judiciary there. The country's biggest labor union launches a giant strike beginning March 27th in Israel. Ukraine's government on March 26th called for an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council to, quote, counter the Kremlin's nuclear blackmail, unquote, after Russian President Vladimir Putin revealed plans to put tactical atomic weapons in Belarus. Union Pacific has become the second major freight railroad in the past week to back away from the industry's longstanding push to cut train crews down to one person, as lawmakers and regulators increasingly focus on rail safety following last month's fiery derailment in Ohio. In Ulster County, the veterinary sedative Xylaxine has been found in several overdose deaths. The Hudson Common Council is discussing how to remove asbestos from its city hall. Metro North trains on the Harlem and Hudson lines will begin new schedules on March 26, with fewer weekend trains to allow for track repairs. And in Hudson, weekend alternative side parking rules are suspended as of March 25th.
You are listening to the WGXC Acra 90.7 on your FM dial and WGXC.org on your smartphone or computer.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy show for you today. We're going to hear a labor story about how folks are trying to get Albany lawmakers to raise the minimum wage in the new state budget that's due April 1st, the end of the week. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Catherine A. Lady of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Tim Williams and Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics. The Commission on Judicial Nomination has released their new list of candidates for Chief Judge of the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals. The state Senate blocked Governor Kathy Hochul's pick of the first list, Hector LaSalle. The new list of possible nominees includes the current acting Chief Judge, Anthony Cannataro, two current Court of Appeal judges, Rowan Wilson and Shirley Tautman, two presiding justices of the state's intermediate courts, Elizabeth Gary and Gerald Whalen, and two lawyers, Caitlin Halligan and Corey Stoughton. Now Hochul needs to choose one from this list and get their nomination through the Senate. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. That after absentee ballots were counted in the March 21st Tannerville mayor election, David Schneider led McGonigal by two votes, 103 to 101. But McGonigal has one chance to tie the election. On March 23rd, the Greene County Board of Elections reported that they are waiting for two cure letters. Cure letters are from voters to correct or clarify errors on absentee ballot envelopes. So far, the board has two, which could make a difference in the race. And other voters have until March 29th to get more cure letters to the Board of Election. After that, the board will make a ruling on those ballots, and the election will be decided. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Republicans Mark Molinaro and Elise Stefanik and Democrats Pat Ryan and Paul Tonko split their votes on a show bill about parental control of education. Republicans call it the Parents' Bill of Rights Act, and it has no chance to pass in the Senate or be signed into law by President Joe Biden. Molinaro, who represents the 19th Congressional District, said, and I quote, "The bill originated from the simple idea that parents should have a say in their child's education. I worked so the bill was reasonable, preserved protections for children, and included measures that ensure parents know what's being taught in schools," end quote. Ryan cited the five Republicans voting against the measure, saying, and I quote, "Democrats and Republicans alike oppose this bill because it is a radical federal overreach that bans books and attacks LGBTQ+ students. It is deeply disappointing that so many of my Republican colleagues went along with this political stunt rather than working on actual improvements to our education system. I'm focused on real issues impacting our public schools, like getting guns out of children's classrooms, raising pay for teachers, and reducing food insecurity," end quote. Molinaro bragged about how he voted against several more radical amendments to the bill. A statement from his office said, and I quote, "Representative Molinaro also voted against significant Republican-led amendments, preventing them from being attached to the final bill. The amendments would have burdened schools with significant costs, interfered with state and local educational decisions, and established Congress's support to suspend all major functions and programs provided by the U.S. Department of Education for K-12 education," end quote. Democrats introduced a motion so that the bill could not lead to book banning, but Molinaro voted against that amendment. The bill is filled with all sorts of radical amendments. Representative Lauren Boebert, for instance, successfully backed amendments to require schools to report when transgender girls join girls' athletic teams and if trans girls are allowed to use girls' school restrooms or locker rooms. The bill, if it were to become law, would also require elementary and middle schools to get parents' consent to change a child's gender designation, pronouns, or name. Tonko said, and I quote, "The bill tramples on the rights of parents, students, and teachers alike. The bill would force schools to submit to inspections of every book in their libraries and every piece of assigned reading material to ensure they comply with draconian standards," end quote. But since this is a show bill that won't pass this Congress, Molinaro and Stefanik aligned themselves with radical Republicans in voting for the bill. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, March 27th. 23.5% of the way through the year with 86 days left until summer. Regional average soil temperature is 38 degrees. Local early morning temperatures range from 25 in Medusa to 35 in Copaic. Anyone that has plants outside soaking up the Sunday sun, bring them in. We got some rain on the way. And that's not going to be nice for roots because the rain will pull the cold surface temperatures down into the soil where it wouldn't be otherwise. So if plants are in the ground, cover them up with the largest container that you can use. Rain starts around 2 p.m. and we get a high temperature of 54. The rain gets stronger as we head into the overnight hours, then begins to taper off at midnight, ending as snow for maybe not everyone, but some of us definitely are going to get it, especially if you are in the hills. That white stuff should amount to about a dusting. 34 degrees is expected to be the low. All that precipitation should come to an end around daybreak, and then tomorrow looks dry and mostly cloudy with a high of 46. Winds put conditions at cold, so wrap on up and grab a hat, and if you're driving, watch out for blowing snow just in case it did happen to accumulate. 26 plant-killing degrees overnight takes us into a sunny and warmer Wednesday with a high of 53. Overnight dips just below freezing and Thursday looks wet and windy with a high of 47. Today's river temperature will be 40 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7 o'clock p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:43 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is quieting down for a bit. Solar wind speed is currently 439 kilometers per second at 0.06 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight with good conditions below 8 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.6, quiet. The current sunspot number is 125, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Thank you. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
No matter who you are or where you come from, you deserve a fair shake at a good life in this country and in this state, and that's exactly what we are going to deliver.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer celebrates with members of the Teamsters after repealing the state's right-to-work law, the first state to do so in more than 50 years. The law prohibited unions from collecting dues from non-union employees, even though they benefited from union protections. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves praised those helping residents recover from a series of tornadoes over the weekend, which killed at least 26 people and leveled entire neighborhoods.
Mississippians have done what Mississippians do. In times of tragedy, in times of crisis, they stand up and they show up.
President Joe Biden issued an emergency declaration Sunday, making federal funding available to affected areas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu fired his defense minister after he called for pausing a court system overhaul. Proposed judicial changes have sparked mass protests by members of the military and others who fear it could cripple democracy. Netanyahu's government holds a very slim majority. His critics say he wants to undermine the courts to cling to power and stay out of prison. Unfounded vote fraud claims are fueling strict new voter ID laws across the country. Former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams says eligible voters are being disenfranchised.
The United States has always required for you to prove who you are. But what has happened in the last decade has been that the standards, the bar has gotten higher and higher.
Ohio is now the ninth GOP-led state to enact new voter ID restrictions and no longer accepts military IDs. A new Idaho law prohibits students from using college IDs, and the state Supreme Court in North Carolina looks poised to revive a photo ID requirement declared unconstitutional just a few months ago. Progressive Representative Cori Bush of Missouri says President Biden is not following through on campaign promises to end federal executions.
Congress must act. Congress must pass legislation to abolish the federal death penalty and encourage states to follow suit.
Lawyers for some of the more than 40 federal death row inmates tell the Associated Press they've seen little change since former President Donald Trump left office. Dozens of legal filings show the Biden administration still actively fighting for the death penalty. According to the Labor Department, more than 800 companies employed nearly 4,000 children illegally in the last year. Critics say that's clashing with the education goals of Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders and others.
We will educate, not indoctrinate our kids, and put students on a path to success.
Citing a labor shortage, Arkansas has moved to ease the work rules for those under 16. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We continue our series on dark money today, focusing on limited liability corporations, or LLCs, commonly used for organizing small businesses. But LLCs can also be used to hide political donations from the public. In most states, other than the original corporate registration, LLCs are not required to disclose their member shareholders. The IRS treats LLCs as a partnership. So for a federal candidate campaign donation, each shareholder of the LLC must account for it in their $3,300 maximum contribution. Instead, in federal races, LLCs are more often used to funnel money to super PACs, where only the LLC's name needs to be reported. There, the money can get bundled to buy negative ads or other activities in support of a campaign. For state races in over half of the country, LLCs can make contributions directly to candidates. In some states, this means unlimited contributions, and in others, the individual limit with no requirement to disclose shareholders. LLCs can also contribute to PACs, super PACs, and dark money groups. So in most states, LLCs are used so voters won't really know who's behind the money influencing their elections. A few states, like Arizona and New York, are attempting to force LLCs to disclose their members' donations, trying to close what's called the LLC loophole. More on that in our next report. We have detailed explainers and resources at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Willie Terry, your Roman labor correspondent for the Hudson Mohawk Network. Today I'm down here at the Empire State Plaza. The AFL-CIO is presenting a petition to Senator Ramos of New York about raising the minimum wage. And I have as my guest...
Hi, I'm Liz Sutton from the New York State AFL-CIO. I'm a communications and campaign coordinator.
Darcy Wells, I'm the communications director for the New York State AFL-CIO.
How y'all doing?
We're doing well. How are you, Willie?
Tell me something about the campaign. How did it get started, and what you hope to accomplish?
Sure. So we are looking to raise and index the minimum wage. And it got started, you know, it's the legislative session now, and Senator Ramos has a bill to raise and index the minimum wage, so we are being supportive of that. So we collected thousands of petition signatures in support of that bill, and we're here to present them to the senator today.
And what's the bill called, or what's the bill number?
The Senate version of the bill is Senate Bill 1978A, and the Assembly version is A2204A.
Now, why is it important to raise the minimum wage? I mean, I thought they had a campaign for 15, and now it's what?
Well, inflation is at the highest rate it's been in a long time, and you know, people who are making lower wages are being hit the hardest. So it's really important that we help those folks keep up with the cost of living by raising the minimum wage, and also it's important to index it to inflation because then the minimum wage will keep up with cost of living each year, and it'll break the cycle of infrequent increases that led to an insufficient minimum wage in the first place.
So what is the proposed raise in the minimum wage that you're calling for?
The actual amount?
Yeah, the amount.
Well, it's the bill talks about increments as we move forward over the years, but right now that's still up for negotiation. The main thing is, though, that we index it, which is something that we've supported for years, and we really feel that it gives employees and employers a way to plan ahead for their future. So if they know what that increase is going to be as we go along with that indexation and they can count on it, they can afford to live a little bit better, and they can also plan for their future easier.
Well, state workers, aren't they under a contract? I mean, how would it affect state workers if they're under a contract? Would it?
Well, it wouldn't, because unless they're making minimum wage, it would only apply to people who are making minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. And that's mainly in the private?
Mainly in the private sector, yes, but there could be some in the public sector as well. And we believe that, you know, if you raise the floor, you raise the ceiling, right? If somebody's making $15 an hour now, or $16 an hour, or $17 an hour, if we have a higher minimum wage, then there's going to be pressure on to raise those wages as well. And that's something that we always advocate for.
So have there been complaints from, you've been getting complaints from members about wage not being raised, you know, you're saying it?
Not necessarily our members, no, but as a labor organization, we advocate on behalf of all working people, so we're concerned about those who are on the lower end of the wage scale, and it's about time that they are paid a living wage, and this is what would work toward that.
And this is non-union or in union?
It's anybody and everybody who works for a living.
Now, I know there's a group up in Tompkins, New York County, and they're calling for 2025.
We're mostly concerned right now with indexing the minimum wage and raising the minimum wage, but not so much focused on a specific amount at this time, as long as we're indexing and raising along the way.
So you think that's a better way to go, by indexing?
Indexing is critically important, yes. Because now you don't have to, now this is what we've been lobbying for years, because there will be continuous increases to keep up with the cost of living. And we don't have to go in each time to try to raise it. There have been many gaps of years where nothing has happened, where people are, you know, living on an unsustainable wage, and we won't have to fight that fight anymore.
Now, what kind of support do you have in the Senate or Assembly?
Well, there are a lot of co-sponsors on the bill. There are more signing on all the time. I know on Monday they gained additional co-sponsors as well. You know, we have thousands of signatures, so there are thousands of New Yorkers that support this legislation. So we're really trying to get this pulled through.
And I think polling has shown as well, just across New Yorkers, all across the state, this is a very popular policy.
Well, what is the governor position?
Well, the governor put the indexing in her executive budget proposal, so we are really excited to hear about that.
What's the time frame have on getting this done?
Well, it would be included in the budget. So the deadline for the budget is April 1st. So we're kind of down to the wire now, which is why we're at this phase of the campaign with the petitions. And then Liz has some other things planned after that that she can point out to you as part of the campaign, what we're going to do next.
Yes, we're running a letter campaign right now. So we've got a letter that folks can just, put their name on and have it sent to their state legislators. And that is up on our website. It's really important that the legislators themselves hear directly from their constituents, and so that they can hear how much support that this bill has. So we encourage everyone to go on our website, which is nysaflcio.org, to fill out the letter and send that off. And then we're going to have a call campaign coming within a couple of weeks toward the end of March. And that'll be up on our website as well once it launches.
Now, you have the petition here today, and I see you have a big, long petition. Why are you giving it to Senator Ramos?
Yeah, so we just want to show how much support her bill has. So we collected these signatures in support of the bill. So we want to present it to her. And, you know, we want it to be very obvious how much support this has. So we're going to send, photos and videos around of, this big petition so folks can see, how much support the bill has.
Is there anything else that our audience should know about this campaign?
Well, I just want to stress how important it is that your legislators hear from you. So, whether it's by sending our letter out or, you want to call up your legislators yourself and talk to them, it's just critically important that they hear from you how important it is to raise and index the minimum wage.
Thank you, Liz and Darcy from the AFL-CIO. And I have as my guest Jessica Ramos. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm New York State Senator Jessica Ramos from Queens. I have the honor of chairing the Labor Committee in the New York State Senate, and our big project this year is to raise the minimum wage for our lowest earners.
So could you tell me a little bit about your bill?
Sure. So our plan in the Raise the Wage Act is to raise the minimum wage to $21.25 by the year 2026. And then we're not done. That's when we want to index it to inflation so that as the cost of living goes up, so should wages, and that way workers won't fall behind ever again. We know that in the first year of passing this bill, we would actually be helping 3 million New Yorkers get a raise of $3,300 in the first year. And that's real money. That's money for rent, that's money for food, that's money for, medicine, and for all sorts of things that people need in order to survive every day here in our state.
What you said about indexing, I think that's quite true, because everybody wonders every time we get a raise, price of living goes up.
Well, that's the funny thing, right? Every time inflation goes up, the price of everything goes up. But when inflation goes down, do the prices go down? Nope. No, they don't. Rent never, you never see a decrease in your rent bill, right? And that's why we want to make sure that workers at all times are able to keep up with their bills. Right now, because $15 is not a living wage, we actually have a lot of minimum wage earners living in shelter, which is really just one more way that we're subsidizing a lot of corporations who can perfectly afford to pay their workers a living wage.
Could you tell me a little bit just about the Labor Committee and what you do?
Absolutely. So here in the New York State Legislature, we have two different chambers. We have the State Senate and the State Assembly. And each house has a bunch of committees to address specific topic areas. And, of course, labor is a very important part of, how our state functions. So in the State Senate, I chair that committee. I chair the Labor Committee. And when we meet, we discuss all of the bills that are being proposed by my colleagues and myself that seek to improve working conditions for workers in different sectors, in terms of pay, making sure that there are labor standards attached to projects perhaps in other areas. And we want to make sure that those people not only are paid a living wage, but that they are also granted the right to retire with peace of mind. And that, of course, means that they should have a benefits package that supports that work.
Now, what kind of support do you have for the bill? I know, you know, once you put a bill together, you got to get support.
Sure, absolutely. So I've been talking to my colleagues now for several months, and I'm proud to say that we now have 30 co-sponsors on our bill. So we're going to know if it's passed or not over the next few weeks. So these next few weeks are critical for fighting for this bill. So I want all of your listeners to check to see if their state assembly member and their state senator are signed on to the Raise the Wage Act. And if they're not, they should call their office, share their story, and implore that they do so that we can get this done as soon as possible.
All right. Thank you. That's Senator Jessica Ramos of Queens.
Thank you. Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Shadows cast by rainbow, there you'll meet the sage. Feeding rabbits bits of lettuce or cleaning out the cage. He can give you more direction than you've ever known. Show you your bronze baby shoes now, my how you have grown. Ain't it nice to fly, you're waving as soft clouds go by, but you want to go exploring, you got to find some truth. You can't spend one more day of Christians shouting.
nice to fly. You're waving as all clouds go by, but peace won't be still of its own free will. We'll be right back.
from Baltimore. This is the band Matmos and their song ESP.